This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. This is The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. Let's talk about transit deserts, because COVID-19 might have changed your commuting routines towards less public transport and more driving. But in efforts to move towards a world with more accessibility and sustainability, governments need to develop public transport networks.
So the question is, can that be done thoughtfully? So one aspect of that is to identify transit deserts, because these are areas with little to no access to public transport. And a recent report by the think tank, The Centre, focused on Shah Alam specifically and found several transit deserts around the city. And by looking at both transit routes and income levels, it highlights both where the gaps in coverage are, as well as where demand might be the highest.
So for more on insights on this, we speak to Azif Azuddin, who is a researcher at The Centre. Good morning, Azif. Now, your study looked at access to transit via population density and property price and income. Now, it's quite clear why density can be a proxy for demand, but explain to us the link between property prices and public transport.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. Yes, so what's key for us in creating this map was to have a visual tool that can quickly and transparently indicate which income areas needed attention in terms of public transport coverage. What we wanted to do and wanted to see was whether low-income areas, and this we proxied by lower average property prices, whether they would have better public transport density, as it should, if we want to provide lower-income communities with affordable transport alternatives. As shown in our pilot map in Shah Alam, some low-income areas are well-covered, but not all. And this is for a host of different reasons. And the idea behind the map was to also democratize urban planning by making this kind of visualizations and data mashups open and accessible to the public. So having the public involved is important because there's only so much you can conclude from a high-level map. You also need grassroots-level information to tell you the specific constraints based on the ground. For example, an area could be a transit desert simply because the roads are too small.
So as if it's difficult to understand introduce public transport after a suburb has been developed and built, what can be done to address these transit deserts in a given city which has already been built? What policies would you advocate?
Right. So first of all, I would kind of argue that that's not necessarily true. For example, the MRT True development and Bandar Malaysia's transit-oriented development, or TUD, in Sungai Besi is happening in mature urban areas. But you're right. In some urban areas, especially those with very small roads, for example, in some urban kampungs or PPRs, for example. So we have to kind of think that there's room to have different vehicle types, like minibuses or even shuttle vans to ply first-mile, last-mile routes. We need to get creative about how to serve these different types of areas. And there's no reason to stick to just one type of vehicle, so long as the safety aspect is ensured and regulated.
And Azif, in your report, you describe services like the MRT as a not complete solution towards ensuring public transit coverage. You know, buses often an example as a more economic solution. But I want to know, why is our bus system not a comprehensive one? I mean, is it ridership, the road conditions, cost? What is it?
Right. I should preface this by saying that the perspective I'm bringing here is as a researcher, and that a transport planner or service provider may have a more comprehensive answer to your question. That's it. In my personal opinion, there are two main reasons. One, we are primarily a personal vehicle country. According to the World Bank, less than 20% of Malaysian commuters use public transport. So when ridership is relatively low, it becomes an egg problem. Do we incur the cost of putting on bus services where the buses are mostly empty for much of the time? But if we don't put on the bus service, how do we get future ridership? It's a cost-benefit decision that policymakers and service providers like Prasarana have to make. The second reason, which is what the centre wants to address, is the historically top-down approach we have to planning. If we were much more user-centric, we would see more innovative crowdsource measures to involve commuters in improving bus routes, frequencies, bus stops, safety, and many other things that go towards making buses an attractive option.
Yeah, Azif, how can the data that you've found from your study tackle first and last mile connectivity issues?
Right. Our pilot map shows one aspect of the first and last mile connectivity, which is the area's coverage of bus stops. A more comprehensive transit density map, which we love to demonstrate or see come out of planners, would also have an additional layer of bus route information. Indicating which neighborhoods are served and not served by feeder buses will quickly show which areas need solutions. we actually could have integrated the information into our pilot map, but we wanted to leave it out at this stage because the visuals were not as clean as we wanted to be. But like we mentioned, this map is a starting point. It has the potential and flexibility to analyze different types of data. In the future, we kind of hope to integrate more granular data such as population. This is possible once Census 2020 is completed, depending on how the data is shared.
Yeah, and your study this time focuses on Shah Alam, but what can you say about the rest of Klang Valley? Are there a lot of transit deserts out there?
Right. Before doing the map, we went to do some old-fashioned fieldwork of different areas of the Klang Valley. You can read some of these on our site, where we walked around different neighborhoods, took buses and trains to confirm the range of issues that commuters face. And from what we saw, we are quite sure there are transit deserts in many spots around Klang Valley, but for various different reasons.
Yeah, but as if the point is, we all know in Malaysia, at least in the Klang Valley, last mile connectivity has been and will remain to be an issue, right? So we are very good at building big LRTs, big MRTs, but walkways don't exist, especially covered ones. Buses don't turn up on time. How can we actually improve this realistically? Is the government actually looking at some of the data that you have actually come up with, for example?
Right. So the government does have data in this sense, where when this data is in the hands of committees and developers, we know that the government has this data. And the fact is, they're also willing to share this data. And a very good example is where recently Prasarana shared transit data with Google Maps to make their bus and train locations live in real time. And that's an effort we see happening in the first mile and last mile area. And this is also a call that's been long desired by commuters. And I think when we're thinking of improving first mile, last mile connectivity and finding solutions to it, it's the long game. And I think with recent improvements to IoT, to data collection, among other things, I think this is the long game that the government and service providers are planning towards improving public transport holistically across the Klang Valley.
Yeah, Azif, what is the research that you've done indicate in terms of how, if at all, COVID-19 has altered the way Malaysians think about public transport?
Right. So we haven't done too much research into that area of how COVID-19 has been covered for public transportation. But from what we see, generally speaking, the fact that there were 35,000 passes were purchased for the recent Penjana My 30 pass shows that people are cautious, but yet at the same time, confident in wanting to take public transport. And the fact that SOPs are in place, the fact that the government is showing efforts and confidence in trying to instill back confidence in public transportation shows that there is an appetite, I think, to return back to public transport. But I think to return back to pre-COVID levels, that might take a bit of a time. And we've seen this trend repeating itself also in other countries that also has public transportation, where COVID-19 has reduced ridership, but with the right SOPs in place and with the right confidence given to commuters that public transportation is a safe form of mobility, a much more affordable one too, we believe that the ridership can increase back again.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Azif Azuddin at the centre. This morning, also on Twitter, we were asking, how easy is it for you to access public transportation? And there were four options: very easy, moderately easy, difficult, and very difficult. And most of the respondents actually have said it is 56% said it's moderately easy, whilst 33% find it rather difficult.
Yeah, and I think what also bears mentioning is the fact that we spend a lot of time focusing on the Klang Valley, but there's many other smaller towns around Malaysia which do need the infrastructure, which do need the transport connectivity that, you know, that KL that they might not get versus what KL is doing. I also want to point out that I have a view on how public transport has been affected by the COVID-19 virus, because when you see the data on used car sales in Malaysia the last few weeks, it's gone through the roof. People are buying used cars because they don't want to get into public transport.
But I thought it's also a function of it being much cheaper because there's a lot of supply,
yes,
right?
Yes,
prices
yes,
have come down
yes.
quite a bit.
So, yes, exactly. So they've also been enjoying the I think, exemption on excise sales tax. Right?
That's for new cars. But just generally, there's the second-hand car market has also softened.
So both new and used have been getting a bounce, but for different reasons. People don't want to get into the bus because it's generally very congested. Same as the LRT.
But there are SOPs, even on buses. I have noticed that they put up a sign limiting the number of users in each bus. And that's the case also on LRT and MRT. But like what he says, maybe it takes a while for people to regain back that confidence to get back onto public transport. But I think what his research is very useful in that it highlights that these transit deserts do exist, and there's an important to kind of, you know, narrow that gap, because exactly for the people that have low income, public transport is what they need. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.